gentlemen listeners of the podcast, or ladies if you wish to buy for a gentleman in your life. I said gentleman because Caldera Labs, a company based in America, has kindly offered to supply Empty Promise podcast listeners with a 20% discount code from their product, The Good, over at calderalabs.com. It is a clean, wild-harvested, premium, non-toxic skincare serum for men. And I have been using it for about a year now, and it's proper good stuff. I can't speak for this stuff highly enough. But if you use the code Empty Promise, all one, doesn't matter if it's caps or not, you'll get 20% off, and you will have the best skincare serum on the market. I would vouch for that. So there you go. It grabbed the world's attention because it was unimaginable, impossible. A Boeing 777 with 239 people on board completely disappeared. And together tonight, we are going to take a deep dive into the events of that night, into the conspiracy theories, and finally compare them against what we think actually happened to history's most infamous vanished aircraft. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Empty Promise podcast.
Promise podcast.
Yeah. Sorry about that. My mind just went a little bit blank when I started. I was like, this is not how we normally start the podcast, but of course it is. Welcome to the Empty Promise podcast. My name is Chris, and tonight you are joining me and my best friend, James D. Downey, as we undertake episode 98 of the podcast.
Exciting. Mom, 98.
Come quick.
We're picking up there.
I mean, it hasn't come quick because we tend to take a lot of time off between.
It's been 6 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, but we're finally here. We're in episode 98, and I'm honestly just thrilled that we're still managing to do this, and we're back getting the content out, because I love sitting down with you on a weekly basis, D, discussing who knows what.
I've decided to rebrand, because we rebranded a lot, but our format on what type of podcast we are now officially a tri-weekly podcast. Not three times a week.
No.
But tri-weekly, in that we try to bring one every week.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That is a perfect way of describing what we do here. Yeah. We used to be a bi-weekly, in that every second week we used to be twice a week. Yeah, we used to be a bi-weekly, tri-weekly. Every 2 weeks, we'd try to get one done weekly, and we'd probably get one done a month. But we're back, and we are, as you can probably tell from the title of the podcast at this point, it is a conspiracy episode. D, it grabbed the world's attention because it was unimaginable, impossible. A Boeing 777 with 239 people on board completely disappeared. And together tonight, we are going to take a deep dive into the events of that night, into the conspiracy theories, and finally compare them against what we think actually happened to history's most infamous vanished aircraft.
My God.
Yeah.
Where did they go?
Exactly.
It's just a strange way, like, not a strange way to phrase it, but when you phrase it that way, it highlights how strange it is.
It's
a Boeing 747, the fucking biggest thing you can even,
man, it's absolutely nuts. And what brought this to my attention, D, was like a week or two ago, there was actually an episode on like the Discovery Channel about this incident, and obviously subconsciously it was in my head, and that's why I brought it to you as a possible topic for this week. But my God, there's some strange shit surrounding this whole this whole disappearance. Like, you know, as you said, how the hell, you know, when you say it out loud, like a Boeing 777, like if you see those airplanes up close, like they are enormous vessels.
Is it 777 or 747?
So there's all different types. So the 747, I think, I could be completely wrong, D. 747 is the biggest, maybe. 777 is the next.
Oh, it's a little bit smaller.
I think so. Maybe. Or maybe. It's just, I'm wrong, and chronologically,
it's interesting. Just when you say 777, I think of 777 is supposedly God's number.
So how could anything wrong happen to that plane?
Yeah, it's just interesting that it's 777.
Maybe it went to God. Maybe that's one of the conspiracies that we're going to touch on tonight. Maybe it's in hell. Maybe
God was no plane. God is the conspiracy.
Maybe there was no plane.
I still maintain it's an invisible plane.
Yeah, I mean, look,
and it's still up there.
It's still circling. It's less than 2 hours.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Perfect crap.
Before we begin, I just want to point out that my research for this episode comes from skeptoid.com, which is a conspiracy podcast, absolutely fantastic when it comes to all things conspiracy, along with certain other video sources that I find online and little tidbits from around the internet. That is where the information that you will be hearing tonight comes from, along with our general thoughts and
along with the brain of Chris.
Obviously, along with my brain, yeah, because that's a fucking weird place in there. You don't want to probe into that. Before we move on tonight, if you are a new listener to the show, you are very much welcome, and we hope this podcast finds you well. If you are a returning listener, welcome back, and we're glad that you are still with us in these difficult times. I don't like that phrase at all. It's been overpopulated, overused in the last couple of months.
I'll see if I can find it, but there is someone did a you know those word clouds,
yeah,
like all these popular things. Someone did a word cloud for that phrase, except you remove, you know, the word. So in these something times, and it was like the biggest so in these troubling times, in these difficult times, in these treacherous times, and then some like in these dreary times, and then some of them were just fucking retarded. Some of them were just like, in these coronavirus times, and in these COVID times, you're like, what are you talking about? Like,
it's a phrase I don't particularly like using, but we are glad that during these times of trouble throughout the world that you've managed to find us, and we hope it finds you well. Remember, you can find the audio version of this podcast over at any podcast hosting service. You will also find the video version if you wish to use this as your preferred medium for looking at me and D on a weekly basis. Well, we're over at youtube.com. Just search for Empty Promise Podcast. You will find the video version, which is just every bit as riveting as you can imagine.
We're both here. We're both on it. I mean, what more can I possibly say?
What more could you possibly want? D, today is the 16th of July, and on this day in history in 2017, Jodie Whittaker is announced as the first female Doctor Who.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
It's a bit random.
Jodie Whittaker. I was thinking of like some. I think I confused her with. Is it Jodie Foster?
Jodie Foster is the kind of manly-ish, I would say, actress.
Jodie. I think I an amalgamation of Jodie Foster and Forrest Whitaker.
Funny you should say that. Jodie Foster and Forrest Whitaker were both in that movie, Panic Room.
Ah, right. Okay.
There you go. Yeah, maybe you watched it recently.
That must be subconsciously in the back of my head. Yeah. Crazy, I haven't watched it recently.
That is an absolutely terrible film. The girl from Twilight is also in that movie. She plays a young, like, teenage girl.
I remember that as well, yeah.
Or her daughter, yeah. And in 1439, I'm going back in time here. I'm going way back in time. Kissing, so the act of kissing, was banned in England to stop the Black Death from spreading.
Man.
Yeah. I don't know. That must be recorded somewhere as, you know.
In those plague times.
In those difficult plague times. Yeah. Did you hear that?
Imagine that happened today.
It's been found. That's what it's called. The bubonic plague was found.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Traces of it were found there like a week or two ago in, I want to say Africa, but I don't know if it was. But it was all over Sky News. Like they found like the bubonic plague basically had come back. The Black Death was back, which just wasn't what the world needed to hear, you know. But, no. You know,
I guess that's what August has in store for us.
They've obviously found like traces of it, or like, I don't know, samples of it or something. I doubt, you know, I think we'd hear a bit more if it was the actual Black Death, you know. I can't imagine it would. Yeah,
you see, like I wonder, is, I mean, this may sound stupid, but I wonder, is the Black Death really that bad? I mean, is it just because back then they obviously didn't know how to handle it, like how to spread it and stuff?
Yeah, rightly so. Like, they used to think that at one point, like the common cold was the biggest killer, and you know, now to us it's just common. So maybe the Black Death was. Now, I could be way off here, Dave. I could be way, way off with this assumption. But maybe the Black Death was just like, you know, a rash or something that just spread. You know, I picture it genuinely like black. You know, do you ever see, you know, like in Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, you get the... Oh, right, yeah. No, you got like big fucking, you got big like, yeah, like, what would you call it? Like blisters, like, type things?
Like sores?
Covered in those, like, yeah. Yeah, I said sores, yeah.
Ooh.
It was gnarly, man. It was gnarly. I wouldn't want to go back to those times.
No, well, thankfully we don't, Dee. Thankfully we live in comfortable times. And, Dee, in keeping with the theme of skincare, as you should mention, what a lovely way to segue you into this.
But, bubonic plague.
It's perfect, skincare. Yeah. Gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, or ladies, if you wish to buy for a gentleman in your life. I said gentleman because Caldera Labs, a company based in America, has kindly offered to supply Empty Promise podcast listeners with a 20% discount code from their product, The Good, over at calderalabs.com. It is a clean, wild-harvested, premium, non-toxic skincare serum for men. And I have been using it for about a year now. And it's proper good stuff. I can't speak for this stuff highly enough. But if you use the code Empty Promise, all one, doesn't matter if it's caps or not, you'll get 20% off and you will have the best skincare serum, on the market. I would vouch for that. So there you go. And no black plague.
And no black plague.
No black plague whatsoever.
I would go as far to say that this will actively prevent the plague.
I mean,
stand by that.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong. Yep. No.
Don't fact check me, but
I have a feeling that the good people over at Caldera Labs are now going to be putting small print on their bottles. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Dee, let's move into some news from this week. What have you got for me news wise?
Okay. Iceland, sensing the world's frustration, have set up a new scheme. Okay. Where they want you to send them your screams. Have you heard this?
No. No, I have not.
Iceland is marketing itself as the perfect place to let your frustrations out, as it channels the power of scream therapy. People struggling with the events of this year are being invited to let off steam by recording their screams and having them played over a loudspeaker in a remote part of the country. 7 speakers are being set up around the country for the campaign, and participants can choose locations such as the peak of Festerfjall in Reykjanes Peninsula and Skógafoss Waterfall. So basically these really remote parts, these big, vast, empty parts of Iceland, they're going to set up a big fuck-off speaker and just let you scream through it.
That's...
And presumably they'll record the result of that so you can have the satisfaction of screaming into the abyss without actually having to go to the abyss.
It's a little bit terrifying as well, because are they going to play these like at all hours of the day and night?
Yeah, hopefully it's like going to be strictly between 1 a.m. and like 4 a.m. to scare the bejesus out of anybody who is like
around. Who happens to be wandering around the waterfall vicinity at that time. You just hear like these blood-curdling screams coming from the top of the falls. My God, like, what are Iceland up to? But, it's one way to take your mind off of things, Iceland, I guess.
Iceland have like literally the best marketing I've ever seen. Like, they're convincing people to go to this basically wasteland. Well, there's like, obviously it's beautiful. It's sort of like beauty about it. It's like desolate, empty beauty. But like their tourism board is like so good.
Yeah.
And even like their football team with the whole, remember the whole thing?
About, yeah, the thunderclap.
The thunderclap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they got great PR.
They do. I mean, yeah, and they have some crazy individuals like personas and celebrities, fitness influencers and whatnot are coming from Iceland. Yeah, I mean look at the mountain. Look at Hafþór Björnsson, like he's the big...
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there you go. He is he's an Icelandic giant, D. He's an absolute unit, like, you know? And some of the fittest women on earth from the CrossFit Games are all from Iceland as well. So there you go.
That's because it's such a barren country. You have to run everywhere, you have to sprint everywhere.
Yeah.
Get away from the polar bears. They probably don't have polar bears.
I could be really, really wrong, but like the only place I ever really hear in Iceland of people visiting is like Reykjavik. Is that because it's like one of the only places?
I think that's probably just where the airport is. I don't know if they have many airports. That's probably the only one. So that's where you're, that's your entry point. But yeah, I think like the part of the appeal of Iceland, I know we're a little off track here, guys, but a part of the appeal of Iceland is the fact that there isn't very many like big settlements
and you can remote.
Just get out there.
Yeah.
You see the Northern Lights,
take a car and drive
around. Unspoiled beauty.
Yeah. You're listening to Unspoiled Beauty right here. So.
Oh, yes. Oh, excellent. Yeah.
Thank you. What other news have you got from the this week?
I got a petition that got signed over in Columbus, Ohio. As you can imagine, with recent events in America, there's been a lot of sort of retconning of things like the Confederate flag and like all of these like oppressive symbols in the South. And it's even went as far back as like the initial settlers who came in and like, you know, displaced Native Americans. So Columbus being the guy, the original guy who came over to America has been getting a bad rap, turned out statues of him and whatnot.
Yeah, so they have decided. He wasn't a good guy though, was he, Columbus?
I mean, I don't know if he was a particularly bad guy.
I mean, all his people did discovering... were like pillage and rape, wasn't it? And then they brought like smallpox with them, and he didn't have the best of credentials, you know.
But by discovering the New World, he essentially doomed it.
Yeah, so, and he discovered it by accident, wasn't it? He was looking for like India or somewhere.
That's what he thought. He thought he discovered the west side of India. He thought he went right around the world and found India.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Native Americans are called Indians to this day. But thousands are hoping to erase the city of Columbus's association to Christopher Columbus even further by renaming it to Flavortown. Flavortown. This is in honor of Columbus, Ohio's own son, Guy Fieri, who is that like extravagant.
Yes, you know, like, I know. Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, chef.
Yeah. I don't even know who he is. I recognize him. I'm like, oh yeah, oh, everyone knows.
I know who he is. Yeah, yeah.
I assume.
And what has it got to do with his son? Sorry, say that again.
No, he is a native son of Columbus, Ohio, so they've decided to rename it in his honor, Flavortown.
That is absolutely
it's a pretty
shocking.
Big city.
It's like
I don't think thousands of people are gonna get their way, but still though.
It's like Americans want the world laughing at them sometimes, you know. Flavortown.
And America has I wouldn't laugh at America for renaming a city Flavortown. I would laugh at them for electing Donald Trump and, well, Florida,
well,
generally speaking.
D, it's funny you say that. My news this week actually comes partly to do with the presidency of the United States. And as you may have heard, Kanye West is running.
Mm.
Did you hear this? He has taken his first official steps towards running for the U.S. Presidency against Donald Trump and Joe Biden. A representative for the rapper filed the necessary paperwork and paid the $35,000 paid the fee to appear on Oklahoma's presidential ballot. It also says that he is running as part of the BDY party, short for the birthday party, which West created when he announced his plan to run earlier this month. When asked why he chose that name, he says, because when we win, it's everybody's birthday.
Good for him.
So there you go.
That good for him.
Piece of news that he is.
I don't know what that's about.
I think it's just the fact that like Donald Trump got elected. And now anybody with any kind of power behind them or large following behind them reckons that they could do a better job. How bad can it be, you know, if Trump's running the country,
there's a conspiracies already afloat that he's working with Trump.
Them two were like pals during like Trump's campaign.
He supported Trump.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of maybe they're still doing that. They're thinking that by Kanye West running, he'll split the the young vote, because young voters aren't likely to vote for Trump. So yeah. if they don't all vote for, what's his name, Joe Biden,
yeah.
then Trump might win.
That's crazy. That's supposed to be in November, though, yeah? Like, that's when the elections start in November or end in November? I don't really know, to be honest with you. I heard a while ago that The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, he was supposedly considering putting his hat in. People were putting Joe Rogan's name forward. It's just anybody with a following, you know?
Yeah. Some people should not be...
No.
Should not be allowed to lead, man.
No.
Saying that... I mean, who says Donald Trump or Joe Biden can do it either?
Can do it, yeah, that's true.
I suppose they do have like experience, I suppose. Anyway, I don't know. America's fucked. I'll just not bother with it, I don't think. Until it's like a place that you can actually go again, I'll just pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's just a blip.
If it's shut out, they're not allowed into Europe, Americans.
That's right.
Because... Yeah. They're so bad with Corona and they're not doing anything about it.
So. I know. There's a lot of countries not doing anything about it, to be honest. Like, you know, America is just so
populated. Yeah, you just sort of expect America, like, I mean, it's kind of like...
They're leaders in the world.
Brazil is doing a lot. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Brazil isn't doing a lot, but it's got like big claims of corruption there.
Yeah.
You got like poverty-stricken countries who can't do much about it. You got like countries like India, which just have like insane population density. They're struggling.
Did you hear about the president of Brazil, like, taking his mask off during a rally? Did you hear about that? No?
He's got the Rona.
Yeah, he took his mask off and said that it was, apparently he was unwell, and he took his mask off and said it was nothing but a cold or nothing but a flu or something, the sniffles he had. And a day later he was either hospitalized or in a very serious way with coronavirus. So,
yeah.
You know, it's people like that I can't feel sorry for, because they're the reason that this whole lockdown and the whole thing is just continuing, and we're not going to get out of it anytime soon with people like this. Do you know what I mean?
So, this is it. But anyway, we said we're going to talk about the coronavirus, and here we are doing it anyway. I have one more piece of news, Chris.
Yes.
That, keeping with our weekly theme of a little bit of Nick Cage.
Oh, yes.
That's what I call this segment, a little bit of Nick Cage.
Yeah, I can get, yeah. We should have a separate jingle for that, you know.
Yeah, we should. We should have a jingle. Mm-hmm. We should have a jingle for our actual podcast.
We should.
And then a separate one for the Nick Cage part. So, NBC Universal,
mm-hmm.
they're like, have combined over in the States to create a new streaming service called Peacock.
Okay.
And they have dedicated a section to the main man himself, Mr. No. Nicolas Cage.
Oh my goodness.
So, like, you know the way most, like, you know how Netflix has, like, crime, true crime?
Yeah, comedy. They have a Nick Cage section.
Nick Cage.
That is this podcast's dream, D.
We should have a Nick Cage podcast.
Yeah.
We already have one? I'm not even sure.
No, we haven't had one yet. But he's on the whiteboard here. Like, his name is on the whiteboard for an episode tangent. So, you know.
So we'll be narrowing in on that eventually.
That's the 100th episode right there.
If you don't want to miss the Nick Cage episode that's coming up, make sure you get, like, subscribed or follow or whatever whatever the big button is on whatever.
Click that little bell. I'll put the little bell on screen now just to remind you, you know. Click that little bell for the notifications or whatever the kids are doing these days.
For everyone who's listening on, like, Spotify, if the bell doesn't show up, that's fine. Just,
if the
just
bell go doesn't to the show app up, and, you're be thankful, because if a bell does show up when you're listening to Spotify, you know, you're in trouble.
If a bell shows up when you're listening to the podcast, you're going to die in 6 days. Unless you send this to 14 friends. Remember those?
Yeah, of course I remember them. They're fucking horrific.
We should start that back up. We should get that going again.
That was like a buddy service thing, wasn't it? No?
I don't know. It was just like every different, loads of different varieties of it.
How did they know shit about us back in high school? Do you remember that? Do you remember that service that you text your name? Or you text, like, was it your name? Or was it like your... Uh-huh.
I think you text your name and, like, where you're from or something.
Yeah.
They came back all the info.
I remember doing that in high school and being so freaked out, because they had heard of, like, people who I had, like, back then played golf against, and where I lived and where I went to school. I don't know how they
got it. Must have just been really good at, like, Facebook and, like, Bebo back in the day. Bebo crawling and finding
out. I don't know where they would have got that information, because not once would I have ever said who I played golf with for the school. That's weird. That's weird shit.
Yeah, but did whoever you play golf with say something about you?
True, maybe, yeah.
Can't get nothing past this guy.
It's a web. It's a web of lies.
Interestingly, the selection of Nicolas Cage movies are like I've literally never heard of these before. So I don't think Peacock is going to be doing so good.
Is Family Man there?
No. I don't think you'd get any of these, Chris. I'm going to call them out here.
Go ahead.
The 8 Nicolas Cage films are Joe, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. That's one thing.
Okay.
Stolen, Rumblefish, Captain Corelli's Mandolin, Red Rock West, Bangkok Dangerous, and Drive Angry.
Bangkok Dangerous. That rang a bell. Bangkok Dangerous. Did that not advertise like when we were in high school? And we obviously, being immature, thought it was a hilarious name. No?
Bangkok Dangerous. I'll find out. Let's see what we got.
That sounds super familiar. But the rest of them, no. Why not put like Nick Cage's like top shows up there? You know, you could have like National Treasure 1, National Treasure 2. You could have Gone 60 Seconds, Con Air. You could have Knowing. It's not great, but it's there. Family Man.
Raising Arizona.
Lord of War. Isn't that one? Yeah.
Fear Ghost Rider. In Las Vegas. Was that him?
Oh, Leaving Las Vegas? Yeah.
Leaving Las Vegas. That's the one.
Jesus. Like there's like Bangkok Dangerous, great Nick Cage movies.
Bangkok Dangerous is Nicolas Cage. It looks like a very generic action film. The hitman has become the target.
Oh, so
that's the tagline. I don't think we need to know any more about that. If you want to see it, go on to Peacock. You can see all the Nick Cage movies.
We should do a film review for that one, dude. That'd be fun.
We said once that we're going to do a Nick Cage like marathon, and we'll just go through all of his like his anthology. But that would just take years.
When I every time since like from we've started saying Nick Cage, all I can see is years and years ago, me and another friend of mine stayed at your house. I don't know if we stayed there for like a day or two, but one night we were watching, there was a guy in our class at school who gave us all the like films on like a hard drive, and we copied them all onto our laptops, like all these pirated movies. And,
Totally legitimate.
Yeah. No LimeWire whatsoever. Anyway, we were watching these movies, and Knowing was one. No, Book of Blood. Book of Blood. Do you remember it? Book of
Blood.
Yeah. I'm almost certain if you Google Book of Blood, it's Nick Cage. And it's something to do with obviously a book, and there's ghosts in it, and we were just all so
there's blood
disappointed in this fucking film. But that's all I see whenever I hear Nick Cage. Is Nick Cage in Book of Blood?
I've got Clive Barker's Book of Blood. That looks like an older.
I think that was it. Maybe it was Knowing. It was definitely Nick Cage. I thought it was Book of Blood.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not seeing Nick Cage here, Chris, unfortunately.
I could be wrong.
I do remember Book of Blood, though, not with Nick Cage. I do remember it. I think. And it was awful. And we skipped through it, didn't we? We skipped through it just to find out what happened.
That's exactly what we did. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Good movie.
That's what I think of when I think of Nick Cage. There you go. Another little slice of Mind and D's adolescent life right there.
Yeah. Pretty sure that sleepover was whenever we were in the early 20s, no?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Right before COVID, actually, dude. Much fun.
It was 6 months ago.
Okay, well, that's all the news I have, D. I don't have anything else. Because news, like we talked about before we came on, is just, it's so morbid now that it's like, I just don't even want to mention like
the COVID. Me being just the worst person imaginable, I went on to the uplifting news subreddit just to get some uplifting news.
Good man.
And I just was not interested in any of it.
Really?
It's all really good stuff. You need to be uplifted, get on there and read about it. But I was just like, oh, here's a girl who got $8,000 tips for getting rid of or ejecting a racist from her business. So here's a girl who like is a amazing things. This woman like she decided to give up her job and go and work as a nurse in the care home where her husband is, so she can spend time with him.
Wow.
She was like locked down with him. Really amazing things. Great things. A kid, the Avengers are teaming up to give this kid who saved
his sister. Why are we not touching any of this news?
Because I was like, oh my god, it's so sappy. So like, oh, we're not a fucking we're not John Krasinski's Some Good News. We're the fucking Empty Promise podcast.
Yeah,
we bring you weird shit about Nick Cage, and I forget what the rest of our news was about, but, you know.
There you go. That right there, what you just said, that was our fucking intro for this week.
Okay, cool.
No, that's awesome. Well, then in that case, let me just remind all the listeners about where you can find us. You will find us on any podcast hosting service if you want to find the audio version, that is, of the podcast. If you're more inclined to watch your podcast or like to watch your podcast, you will find us over at youtube.com/EmptyPromisePodcast. All of our old episodes are there, and you can catch up with us at any time, day or night. Right there. I don't know where I was going with that. If you want to get in touch with us, which, you know, we love taking questions, comments, queries, whatever. If you can't contact Dee and myself directly, you will find us, or you will contact us at our email, which is Dee?
EmptyPromisePodcast@gmail.com.
And you will also find us on any social media application. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just search for Empty Promise Podcast. You'll get us there. You can write to us there if you wish. But apart from that, Dee, I think we're just about ready to move on to our main topic for tonight. I'm very, very excited to kind of get stuck into this and get your opinions on the plane that disappeared. But before we do you think, can you fill screen time for like 30 seconds while I pee? Because I've drank a lot of tea.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna leave this with
you. I'm just gonna do X-Files music for the plane that disappeared.
Perfect.
Actually, I'll tell you what I'll do, which could be interesting. I will go find some of that uplifting news that I said I wasn't gonna put in. This is just basic laziness, going on to Reddit and finding this. Four high school students created a colouring book to teach kids about the coronavirus. In the first month, the girls sold roughly 500 copies and raised more than $1,000 for various charities. Isn't that great? Fantastic. First trial of Moderna's coronavirus vaccine produces immune responses in all participants. Fantastic. Chris Evans gifting an authentic Captain America shield to a hero boy. Fair play, Chris Evans. Coronavirus smokers quit in highest numbers in a decade, so less people are smoking. That's good. LA artist donates 1,800 paintings to every member of a Brooklyn hospital. Oh, of Brooklyn hospital staff to show appreciation. Farmers hatch plan to return an area the size of Dorset to wild nature.
What did I miss?
I'm just giving a, because I felt bad about not doing the uplifting news, because I'm just giving like a real just bop 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 of good news.
This could become a segment, Dee.
Doctor cares for baby for a month after his parents test positive for COVID.
Beautiful.
And finally, the Avengers assemble to comfort a young boy who halted dog attack on his sister.
Wow.
So isn't that great? Those are headlines. Nothing more, nothing in depth, nothing of real use, but I hope that makes you feel better.
It does. It did. It will.
Good night.
Good night. No, we are back and we are ready to get stuck into this. So Dee, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, I would say whiz through this or fly through this.
Whiz. That's one.
That's another. Did you see that the sunlight just kind of came through the window there and I've suddenly got really kind of angelic looking?
Radiant, Chris.
Radiant, some were saying. But yeah, I'm going to go through my notes, Dee. There's quite a bit, but I've condensed it down into what I kind of really want to talk about, the interesting bits, the conspiracies, things like that, and we'll just take it from there. I'll try to keep it nice and short and sweet and see what your opinions are on the disappearance of Malaysian Airlines MH370. So it grabbed the world's attention because it was unimaginable. A Boeing 777, that's 777, with 239 people on board, completely disappeared. Let's start with the basic facts, okay? So the plane's late-night departure was from Kuala Lumpur.
It's en route. Kuala Lumpur.
Am I saying that right? Kuala Lumpur? Lumpur?
Lumpur. I'm not sure.
You know where I'm speaking of. It was en route to Beijing. Now, I don't know the exact distance of that. I should have probably checked that, but it's not overly far away.
I think like Asia is kind of, it's kind of like deceptively it's difficult to say how it feels like they're close, but they could actually be really, really far.
Really far, yeah.
China's really big, and like Beijing is like on the west coast of it, so
yeah,
could be a while. I don't know.
Okay, well, about 40 minutes later, they signed off from the Kuala Lumpur air traffic control over the South China Sea, about halfway between Malaysia and Vietnam. They stopped squawking the ID code. So every plane has like an ID code that they have to use whenever they fly into like another country's air space.
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped squawking the ID code they used with Kuala Lumpur. From that point on, everything else we know about the plane's flight comes from a few scattered radar and satellite contact. Minutes after signing off, so just minutes after this sign off, the plane made a U-turn and headed back for Malaysia. So it's en route from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. 40 minutes later, they sign off. They're now between Malaysia and Vietnam. And as soon as they sign off from that airspace, minutes later, the plane makes a U-turn and starts heading back towards Malaysia. The plane was equipped with a system called ACARS, or I'm just going to call it ACARS, that periodically transmits maintenance data. And this ACARS was no longer working after the U-turn. I picture that just to be like what a black box is on a plane, I'm assuming. Later they began a right turn and were last detected by military radar out over the Andaman Sea west of Thailand. Final contact was made between an Inmarsat satellite and the aircraft's automated satellite unit, which was a simple handshake connection, because there were no aircraft systems using the satellite. So a handshake connection, I'm assuming, is just basically touching base, just where the planes will touch base with like whatever air traffic control is on. I'm pretty sure just a signal or signify that they're in that space. The handshake doesn't include any location data whatsoever. But Inmarsat was able to locate the plane as it was having been somewhere along an arc represented by specific distance from the satellite. So basically what all this means is the final contact was made to this satellite, this InMars satellite, which was just a simple handshake connection. Now, there's no data, no location data from this handshake with this satellite. So all this satellite could do was give a specific arc as to where the plane could be, basically. That's what the satellite could do.
So like a ballpark.
A ballpark. That's exactly a ballpark. Yeah. But the thing is that this arc stretches across a few thousand kilometers of the Indian Ocean, west of Australia. So, you know, quite a vast area there. And that was about when the plane's fuel would have run out. And then suddenly there was nothing more ever heard from MH370. So searches were unsuccessful. Over the subsequent weeks and months, the flight path was refined, search areas redefined, and search efforts were gradually given up. But while that was happening, out over the ocean, back on land, the conspiracy theories were starting to build, which is what we're going to touch a little bit on tonight. So the easiest and most obvious theories were the first claims of hijackings or perhaps a suicide from one of the pilots. The massively experienced captain, I'm just going to surname here because I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, but Captain Sa and his younger co-pilot, Hamid. A lot of this attention focused on Sa, who had just been separated from his wife. He didn't appear to have any future plans on his calendar, and his flight simulator game back at his home had some unusual Indian Ocean landings on it. So that's a bit like, that's
a bit suspect.
That is weird. Like, yeah. But despite intense scrutiny for years, Sa was eventually exonerated more or less, as none of the evidence was compelling enough. So they said they rule pilots out. So pilots, suicide, they rule that out.
I mean, that's kind of, it was a simulation game. So like, it's not, I mean, if that was me playing a game and you're like, just shits and giggles, like, crashing planes in the game. I've done that countless times in GTA for no apparent reason.
I guess. It's weird. I think it's just kind of weird though that there's a few of them in the Indian Ocean as well. That's a bit weird. But yeah, it's speculation. One colorful theory is that the plane was headed to Diego Garcia Island in the Western Indian Ocean. This is where a joint British-American military base is located. Its intelligence hub is on this island. So Diego Garcia Island. And this theory was promoted by a French author and former airline executive, Marc Duguin, who claims that the Americans would have shot it down if they saw the plane approaching their airspace out of fear of like a terrorist attack or something, you know?
That's interesting.
He also claims to have interviewed residents of the Maldives who saw an airliner fly low over their islands. However, the Maldives are not on the way to Diego Garcia. Eyewitness reports from the Maldives did not seem to exist until 3 months after the disappearance, and an actual shootdown would have produced voluminous debris that would have been easy to spot. So if this plane had have been shot down, like this theory suggests, by the defense guard or whoever's on this island, it would have produced an awful lot of like scrap, an awful lot of metal debris, and that would have been spotted a lot, you know, before now, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Because like that, all that stuff would float, right? Like that would,
I'd imagine so. Yeah,
wouldn't necessarily sink. Like so.
Yeah.
I'm imagining like if a plane goes in the water, more or less intact, it's probably gonna. Well, maybe I'm wrong. It's probably gonna sink, right?
It's good. Yeah, it's gonna float for a duration, I'd imagine, and then it would sink. Yeah.
But like, if it breaks up into 100 different pieces.
Oh, it's gonna float. Those pieces.
Each of those little pieces will float. Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine so. There are some various conspiracy theories implicating that North Korea hijacked the plane. Some say North Korea wanted to reverse engineer the Boeing 777 to advance its own aircraft industry. Some say the plane was brought there on purpose to deliver a nuclear weapon to the North Koreans. And some say that the US shot it down to prevent this. However, all stories that have the plane headed to North Korea are clearly ruled out by all the satellite and radar data. So these theories saying that it was going to North Korea, that they were delivering, you know, weapons of mass destruction or whatever they were delivering. There's no data that supports this whatsoever. Now, that's not saying that the data couldn't be hid, I guess.
Fudged.
Although, I don't know geography too well to like say whether you could fly into North Korean airspace without touching other airspace first. So somebody would have seen this.
Yeah, you know, maybe. Let me see. Let me get a little map up. Although I just kind of think, is it just blaming North Korea because it's North Korea?
Easy suspect, I guess. Especially you know, because nothing comes in or out of North Korea. So
I have something here. So the distance between Kuala Lumpur and Beijing is 4,346 kilometers.
Okay.
I don't have a reference for that. I don't actually know how far that is, but it seems far.
Yeah. Okay.
Seems pretty far. Like it's basically like it's more of a north-south type of journey, Chris.
Straight down?
Straight up. So like straight up. Beijing, sorry. Beijing being like sort of on the top of China. But Beijing is really close to North Korea. So
right, okay.
But to make that journey, you would fly over Thailand and all of China. Okay. So, yeah. Not so sure about that one.
And what about North Korea and all of this?
So North Korea is like it's pretty close to Beijing.
But they would have had to fly through a different airspace first of all. Like, there's no way.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's possible that they could have just avoided all of those things. But
okay,
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know about North Korea, just because, why would you have a nuclear weapon? You know, why do it on a plane full of like how many people? 230 some odd people.
Yeah. 239. Yeah, yeah. True.
I think they have that.
Hide it in plain sight. You know that kind of way. I don't know. Maybe. There has been a recent on evidence claim by an independent conspiracy theorist that a new Russian spy satellite observed MH370 crash into the Bay of Bengal, and Vladimir Putin knows all about it but hasn't said anything because he doesn't want the West to know about the satellite.
Hmm.
Which is strange. Another Putin claim was made based on the fact that the US had initiated sanctions against Russia just before the disappearance. And so to retaliate, Putin had hijackers on the plane take it over and secretly fly it to the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. How this action against a Malaysian plane would constitute meaningful retaliation against the United States was not... it's not really explained, no. You know what I mean? If you want retaliation at the United States, why would you hijack a plane?
You know what's really going to piss them off?
That's what I mean, like, you know. So you can see, like, theories are starting to pop up from everywhere because it's not making too much sense that a plane of this magnitude, of this size, just disappears.
Yeah, there's no crash site. They haven't found anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not crazily opposed to the idea that Putin wouldn't reveal the location of a crash plane because it would reveal his stealth, their satellite capabilities. I'm not opposed to that. But if it crashed in the Bay of Bengal, would it not have been found by
it would have. Well, I mean, it depends, I guess, who gets to it first. No one's going to find it.
But why would he get to it? He wouldn't care if they found it, because they'd be like, oh, they found it by themselves. They don't know nothing about mine.
Yeah.
I think. Although, unless the Bay of Bengal is significant because that's the it's kind of like lost. It's like, it's the completely wrong direction. It wouldn't have been there, but for some reason it was, and that's where it crashed. And he knows it's there in the completely wrong place, but nobody else does. And they never would think of looking there. But how do they prove that it fell there? Exactly. I don't know. It seems like a bit of a, it's like a catch isn't a steal. Sort of, how can you prove that?
Yeah.
How can you prove that it crashed there and that he knows about it without knowing that it crashed there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Russia, though. You know, Russia.
Like, I don't doubt Russia's up to some shady shit.
They have the capability, I guess. If they wanted to hide something like this, they probably could. There has also, of course, been every matter of loony conspiracy theory. Everything from alien abductions to time warps to alternate universes. A highly unscientific poll on the CNN website, so that's the news website in the US, once revealed that 9% of respondents felt that any of several supernatural fates could have happened to MH370.
What was the percentage there, sorry?
9%.
Oh, okay.
9%, yeah. Not massive, but I mean, people are still thinking that it's, you know, it's possible, I guess.
When you can't explain something
using
like the simple basic things of, oh, it crashed and we'll find the proof of that, you know,
you're going to start going supernatural. Yeah,
exactly.
It just makes no sense to me, though, like this happened in what, 2015, did I say? It's 2015. And like, at that time, it's not like this happened back in like the 70s, the 80s, or the 60s, or whatever, where we don't have the capabilities that we have nowadays. You know, we have satellites constantly orbiting the Earth, sending feed, you know, sending information back. We have, you know, countless manned, like 24, 365 manned, air traffic units. We have, and like, a designated air traffic control for every single, like, square inch of land and basically water throughout our world, and suddenly this massive plane can just disappear.
Yeah,
it's just like,
it is bizarre. Like, I mean, I just don't understand how it just, like, as you say, like, whatever, it had to change its transmitter, or what was it, like, its squawk code or something like that, because it changed the region it was in.
Yeah,
airspace it was in.
Yeah,
like, I don't understand how, even just by switching that off, they go silent. Like, they just cannot be found. Like, I always thought there has to be some way that thing is transmitting, or radar or something that's going to pick that thing up.
Well, I'll touch on that a little bit here now, just that you bring that up. What, within days of the flight's disappearance, writers and bloggers of the airline Pilots Association had fairly complete explanation for a probable scenario that could have taken place, one that fits all the facts and involved nothing extraordinary. In fact, when you stick to the aviation websites and the and avoid the consumer news sites where the reporting was actually by non-experts, there's much less confusion about the whole thing. Like these pilots, these are the guys in the know. These are the guys who are flying the planes around the clock. They know, you know, telltale signs, basically. But the most telling for the pilot's theory are the facts that the automated communications stopped. So this automatic communication system just suddenly stopped, suggesting that the ACARS system could have been damaged and that the emergency locator beacon was never triggered while within range of anyone on the ground who could have heard it, suggesting that whatever happened was not sudden and catastrophic. So what this is suggesting is that nothing just came out of the blue. You know, like the plane didn't like suddenly hit, like, I don't know, a cliff or another plane and blew up and everything just failed. This had to be something over time. So it seems probable that the pilots became incapacitated in the plane. So what's a plausible scenario that could explain this with these other scenarios? Also, the pilot community spoke up early and loud about the possible smell of smoke. Modern airliners have lots of electronics, lots of wiring, and 1,000 places where something can go wrong. MH370 was also carrying a cargo of 220 kilogram of lithium ion batteries. Any one of these things could have started to smolder or caused some wires to melt and put out a whiff of smoke into the cockpit. Airline pilots all agreed on what would be the first thing they'd do when smelling smoke. Turn off all the unnecessary electronics, everything that's not required to keep you in the air. Everything that might be burning, probably even the radios. This would nicely explain that the air car, this ACARS system no longer transmitting, and it would nicely explain the lack of radio communications. The emergency,
that's interesting, yeah. Yeah,
the emergency locator beacon, which cannot be switched off, would have had nothing to trigger it yet, because everything was just switched off.
The emergency beacon, they have to actually say,
yeah,
we emergency, we're in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. See, I like this one because I like the idea that these are other pilots because they'll know.
They're in the know.
They'll know like what I do in that situation. They'd know like not necessarily what's protocol, but they'd know like realistically what's gonna, you know, what someone would do.
Yeah.
So that kind of that carries a lot of weight for me.
Whatever
the batteries.
Yes, 220 kilo of lithium ion batteries. But whatever might have been melting or burning likely got worse and the pilots became incapacitated, probably by carbon monoxide, possibly by decompression from an unknown cause. And then they had set the course to head for an emergency landing site, but unconscious as they were, they overflew it on autopilot until the plane ran out of fuel, crashing somewhere west of Australia and into the Indian Ocean. By then, the emergency locator beacon would have been out of range for any receivers.
So
this is suggesting that possibly, something caught on fire in the plane, wiring or batteries or whatever, and over time, the pilots were effectively poisoned by carbon monoxide. Or maybe the smelt smoke shut everything off. Made a U-turn the head back because they knew something was wrong, but while making this turn or while in flight, whatever, they became unconscious from the fumes. And then the plane, which would have been on autopilot, would have continued straight out into the ocean until it ran effectively out of fuel and crashed somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining it being quite severe, like to the point of switch everything off. Let's set a course for an emergency landing, but literally before you could even really like get that set up, you were like passed out.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because they said that they had only just passed, they had only just signed off from the airspace minutes later before they head back from Malaysia. So they're just out of airspace like range before they sign off. So yeah, it would have had to take in its toll pretty drastically, I would have imagined.
But why not? Like, I still don't understand why. Like, why would you not give a shout out? Like, we smell smoke. We're about to switch off the radio. True. Why would they not do that?
True.
And then also, why would they not, like, how does something fly on, like, I don't know how much fuel this thing has, but if it can get to the west, as you said, the west coast of Australia, like, how does someone not, how is that not picked up on radar? Like, how does some flight tower not go, like, there's a fucking,
there's a
something moving somewhere it's not supposed to be?
Well, I'll pick up a little bit on why they, what you just said there, why they didn't feel it necessary to report that there was smoke filling in the cockpit, if this is what could have happened. If smoke was filling in the cockpit, we tend to immediately ask why the pilots didn't radio to report an emergency. That seems like a rational question to ask, like you just asked me there, Dee. We've seen it all in movies. As soon as there's a slight problem, the pilot grabs his radio and starts shouting, "Mayday, mayday," you know? But in the real world, this is not how pilots are trained to handle emergency situations. Nobody on the ground can help you with the smoke in your cockpit. The number one mantra for all pilots consists of three words: aviate, navigate, communicate. Aviating is flying the plane. It's always the first priority. No matter what is happening, the first thing pilots should focus on is keeping the plane flying safely. Popularly cited case where this didn't happen was the crash of Eastern Airlines Flight 401, where the pilot's attention was on debugging the landing gear warning light, and they didn't notice that they flew the plane straight into the ground.
Fuck.
So aviation is the first thing that pilots are trained to do, that no matter what is happening. So the cockpit could have been on fire, and it's their number one priority to keep that plane in the air. I don't know, though, like, as you say, like, how would communicating back with, like, someone or anyone, how would that, you know, dismiss you keeping the plane in the air? That's what I don't understand.
You know? Yeah, I don't know, like, although one thing it does remind me, this reminds me slightly of, do you ever see that, or hear the story of, that guy Sully Sullenberger?
Oh, yeah, the Miracle in the Hudson.
Miracle in the Hudson, yeah.
Yeah,
apparently he like, cut off comms for, like, a couple of minutes while he was doing that. So, I kind of understand, maybe that's kind of the logic behind it, is that, you know, they have to, like, they're in a critical point where they're, like, the decisions we make here determines whether we live or die, so, like, there's no time to communicate, we just gotta do it.
We just have to, yeah. Maybe that was it. It just, I don't know, it seems, especially if you have a situation of this magnitude, like, you're going to need to tell someone that your cockpit or your plane is filling with smoke, surely. I don't know, I'm not involved.
Do they not have to ask? Well, I suppose you do this after, but yeah, do you not have to ask, like, where's the nearest emergency landing
Emergency
point
landing,
or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
How do they know this stuff, you know?
Well, we know that Saa and Hamid got as far as the next step, navigate, because they made a U-turn to head back to an alternate landing site, probably the other turn shortly thereafter. Obviously, they never satisfactorily got through that step before being incapacitated. Airline pilots are generally not surprised that whatever happened, talking on the radio never made it to the top of their priority list. The reconstructed flight path that we now know the plane followed is consistent with airline pilots' recommendations of what backup airports would have been chosen to head towards at various points in the flight. The first U-turn put them on a direct vector to Pulau Langkawi, which is much preferred over Kuala Lumpur because of its long runways and flat terrain surrounding it. Everything that the plane did is what pilots say they would have done. So there's nothing that kind of screams, you know, that this was done out of, like, not even desperation, but, like, just completely out of character. This is right down, you know, meat and potatoes. This is what pilots do. So something went wrong, and the pilots were making those emergency calls, and nobody really seems to think that there's anything strange about this.
Well, that shut me right up, didn't it? I mean, yeah, the fact that this is other pilots seems to give it a lot of weight. The cynic in me is still sitting here going, you know, I can't put myself in a position where I wouldn't go, like, we're in trouble here.
Yeah.
Over the comms. But
tell somebody, anybody.
Yeah. You know, let's put my tinfoil hat on for a second. This is a conspiracy episode, after all.
Yeah.
Let's embrace it. You know, would that be pilots covering for pilots? Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe I don't think, I think it's difficult to get a lot of people to agree on anything these days. So the fact that all the pilots agree, that's what we do.
Yeah.
Maybe they're, I don't know. I don't know if there's a conspiracy there, to be honest, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's not totally far fetched what you're saying, that these pilots who are saying, yeah, this is what we would have done, could easily be covering for maybe a mistake that they know that this pilot has made, or perhaps. Who knows? Like, for all we know, the pilots could have been like intoxicated or on anything, and this is just another other pilots' ways of, you know, keeping their kind of head above water. Yeah, their creed. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't. I'm kind of a spitball on that. I don't actually think I believe that, to be honest. But
As evidence did begin to appear over the years, it was all consistent with a theory of a crash into the ocean west of Australia. Beginning in July 2015, aircraft parts that were all eventually positioned or positively identified as coming from that specific Boeing 777 began to wash up on the beaches of the island of Reunion, the coast of Mozambique, South Africa, and Pemba Island of Tanzania, all in the Western Indian Ocean. Over 20 aircraft parts have been found at the time of these notes, when these notes went out. All were found where they would be expected to have drifted over time had the plane crashed in the general area of the ocean west of Australia. None of the debris conveyed any clues about the cause of the crash, but they do prove, of course, that the plane ended up in pieces in the ocean and not secretly landed in Russia or transported through an alien space warp. So yeah. Parts are now starting to wash up. Parts have washed up on beaches all over the world that they're saying do correspond to this plane, the Boeing 777. But I obviously don't know enough about it. And the show that I watched a week or two ago was explaining how especially the tides in those waters can be so like harsh or currents or whatever.
No?
And it would have, like, you could be looking literally in entirely the wrong location for, you know, that plane could easily just woof and away and gone. And it could be like several thousand miles away from where you expected because the currents are moving so much and they're all sitting on, like, I don't know, tectonic plates or some kind of plates. I forget what it was, but basically what they're saying is if the plane, yes, had have landed in the ocean, by the time that it was looked for, it could have been just away, gone.
Yeah, completely away.
Yeah. So I don't know. It just
does that mean that it could have just exactly what happened? It crashed in the ocean and drifted into all over the world.
I mean,
or does that mean that it could have crashed in west of coast of Australia, or could have crashed in outside of Kazakhstan or wherever it was flown to by the Russians, or up by North Korea and still wound up?
Nobody said anything about the plane being shot down either, and that was a thing that started.
I remember that. Yeah,
it started happening it didn't start happening. It was happening in the world. I don't know if it was around this time or after it, but wasn't there like was it Ukrainians shot down a plane, or there was a Ukrainian plane shot down?
Yeah, by the Russians, I think.
Yeah, and that was huge. That, you know, similar thing could have happened. You know, plane could have just been shot down. I don't know if that explains the radio transmission and the beacons and all this kind of stuff switching off. I just genuinely don't know, but there's another theory. But the loss of MH370 renewed longstanding calls for technology that would allow any commercial aircraft to be tracked by satellite, something that many people are surprised to learn that has not already been the case. It's called space-based ADS-B, or automatic dependent surveillance broadcast. Using the Iridium Next satellites. Most of the world's next generation air traffic control systems plan to require space-based ADS-B as default. MH370 used conventional radio-based transmissions to ground stations, but it was out of range and the pilots had switched it off anyway. With a space-based system with global coverage, no commercial plane would ever get lost again so long as the system is working, and controllers would know right away whether a plane had deviated substantially from a flight plan. So
that's the good that came out of it, I suppose.
Yeah,
out of the travesty is that this may not ever happen again.
I mean, to be honest, before I read this, I was under the impression that planes were just tracked that way anyway.
Me too.
I didn't know that they were using old kind of fluffy kind of systems. Had MH370 used such a system, we'd have known exactly where and when it went down, and probably would have had fighters escorting it by the time it struck over southbound, struck out southbound over the Indian Ocean and trying to communicate with it. We may not have been able to save lives in this case, but we would have greatly eased the suffering of family members. It is perhaps a small comfort to them to know that the severity of their own trauma has at least given a push forward today, when others who lose loved ones will never have to suffer the same lack of closure.
So, okay.
So, MH370, like...
What happened, Chris?
Yeah, what the hell happened? Like, how the hell do we lose a plane? A full plane? No
2015.
No survivors, 2015. No signs, no air traffic control sees it, no, I don't know.
Where do you come down on it, Chris? Was it what the official report is?
I read possibly maybe what a year, maybe a bit longer than a year ago, that there was a theory that the plane had landed in Antarctica. That there was a plane spotted in Antarctica landed, and they were saying that it was that of MH370. It was being hid in Antarctica because it was carrying goods for a research base down there. Now, when I first read that, I was like...
Batteries, actually. Bringing batteries down.
Yeah. I was like, no way. But I don't even know where to weigh in on the whole thing anymore. I like to think... I don't like to think, but that it was just something like the pilots maybe became unconscious and the plane flew itself out of fuel and crashed into the ocean. I wouldn't like to think that it was pilots maybe on a suicide run, that it was premeditated or anything like that, but... We don't know. That's the point. And it's so strange that we still don't know, because I can't get over that a full plane, like a full plane D has been lost just on our
planet. I think, whenever something goes into the ocean, I think that's sayonara, like that's gone.
Yeah.
The ocean is so vast and so deep, and we can't really search it well at all.
I mean, we're still...
Once it's in the ocean, it's gone, and we don't understand how the currents work. We guess and we can predict, but at the end of the day, as you say, there could be all kinds of stuff going on that just makes it go each and every which way.
Exactly, and like we are only discovering like old like World War boats and vessels that have been lost from back then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So... Who's to say that like 20, 30 years, like they're not going to uncover like
the
and just lying at the bottom of the ocean? It'd be weird.
And there's like a dynosaur, a pterodactyl is sticking in the middle of it or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Talk it down.
I don't know. But I don't know what I believe with this. It's just,
I think it's a plane that disappeared. Yeah. I think barring anything else, it probably just did. It was a crash landing. Things went wrong, and they went wrong in the perfect order so that we never find out. It's more mysterious to me how that can happen.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that a plane could just go missing.
Yeah.
I think that's why a lot of conspiracy theories popped up, because it was like, how do you lose a plane? It's a plane. It's massive.
I don't know.
But yeah, like I say, once it goes in the ocean, it stops being massive. It's a drop after that.
Yeah,
the
ocean's just so I'll have to look into it, but I don't think that any telephone calls were even tried to be made. I don't know if that was a thing. You know, from like if passengers felt the plane going down. I don't know if you get signal.
Yeah, I don't think you would. Would you? You know, that like screw far.
True. I that's something I never even thought of researching until now. Like,
I mean, if the aircraft can't communicate with like home base, then you're pretty far out. I don't think there's going to be any. Well, there's like satellite phones and stuff, so you don't know.
Like, how could the... Like, surely the flight attendants, though... You see this in movies all the time, and I don't know how like accurate it is, but like if something goes wrong in the cockpit, and I know the door is locked, but surely they can still get in. And surely they would know how to turn on a radio.
Yeah, but I'm guessing, like, if the cockpit was filling with smoke, like, the rest of the plane is probably going to be really bad. You're probably at that point. It's just a case of keeping people...
Right now, I mean, the cockpit could have been the last place to fill.
Like, yeah.
The whole cabin could have already been knocked out at this point, and they didn't know anything about it. That's a strange thought, that.
I think for me, it just got destroyed.
Yeah.
Burnt up and crashed. I have like five of the
Yeah.
Five of the more interesting and weirder conspiracies as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You've mentioned most of them, actually. It was shot down.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, you've mentioned this already. The theory is that it was shot down during a joint military exercise between the United States and Thailand.
Oh, okay.
For whatever reason, that would have been in a book by Nigel Cawthorn called Cawthorn. The Mystery. Yeah, okay. Cawthorn. Number two, this one's kind of interesting. So to say it was hijacked, with the 13th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on New York and Washington approaching, conspiracy theorists have turned much of their focus to what would have been dubbed the 9/11/14 theory. So believing that this was just another, it was just inspired by 9/11 and it was supposed to be like, it was supposed to be like a larger terrorist attack than that.
Steal. Yeah.
Yeah. But they got overpowered or whatever, the terrorists got overpowered.
Hijackers.
The hijackers, and it got crashed in the ocean. This one's mad. It was switched.
Yeah, I've seen that floating about conspiracy sites as well. What does that even mean? That it was switched with a sister plane or something?
Yeah. This is from Jim Stone, who is a self-described independent journalist. He proposes the theory that it was Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 mm-hmm. and not Flight 17 that was shot down over the Ukraine in July last year. He offers little in the way of explanation about who might benefit from switching the planes or how they might have achieved it. So he just says that that's what it is.
But, that's weird.
Whatever.
I mean, there's theories that got about the Titanic as well, isn't there? That it was a sister ship.
Yeah.
The Olympic or the Olympus or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. That's one I meant to talk about another point. But yeah, basically, there was one ship that was doomed, like it was no good and it was falling apart, and they switched it, called it the Titanic, and had it sink on its maiden voyage to claim the insurance money. It's all about insurance money.
I don't think Malaysian Airlines were mad about insurance money.
I don't think that's very plausible.
Maybe another dimension. Stranger things.
Maybe happen. Another dimension, to be fair.
I mean, we just don't know.
Here's one, Chris, that like this is what despite all these theories, this comes from the Independent. Mm-hmm. Saying, despite all these theories, the reality is certainly more mundane. Coming from a guy called David Learmont, who is an aviation expert, he is convinced that whatever happened to the plane was, I quote, a deliberate act by someone on board, probably the captain.
Oh. So
he says...
He says it was suicide, basically.
Yeah, he says it was suicide. He says, I know people, especially journalists, would like this weird event to have more in common with Star Wars, but actually, it was probably a carefully planned suicide and revenge attack.
I mean, let's think about what we know about the pilot that I mentioned earlier. Like, he had just recently split from his wife. He had no upcoming flights or plans made. And his flight simulator game had a couple of previous ditched attempts in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah.
That's weird, man.
You know, and he would have the authority to switch off those communication devices, and he would have the capability.
How much could I wonder how much could a co-pilot do, or like what would have happened to co-pilot in that situation? Like, could he? Like, co-pilot would surely know the actions of a man who's
kill everybody.
Yeah. Like, could he take over the plane himself? I'm sure he can. If
you're planning to do this to a plane, I don't think it's spur of the moment. So he would have planned what to do about the co-pilot. True.
Yeah.
No doubt. But that's all, like, you know, that's just all speculation. And that's one guy's opinion.
Theories out there, man.
Exactly. Because I also have kind of spinning away off on that on a bit of a tangent,
We
enjoy to do. I have four more aviation conspiracy theories.
Of course.
No, I have a list of like the
is this
the
famous that? No, these are separate.
Just general ones. Okay, just general ones. Good. I have like a collection of like the most famous aviation disappearances as well, such as Amelia Earhart and whatnot. But I think those are sort of deeper topics that probably would
cover in better. Yeah,
you're probably better to cover them in detail. But here's four aviation myths and theories that you've probably heard of. Number one, oxygen masks are only there to keep you docile. Have you ever heard of that?
No. So they're there to keep you What, docile? So what, when the plane's like, going down?
You won't be running around and causing havoc. This is a theory, and it's more or less completely false. Brad Pitt is to blame for this one from the film Fight Club, where he says the following. You know why they put oxygen masks on planes? Because oxygen gets you high. In a catastrophic emergency, you're taking giant panic breaths. Suddenly you become euphoric, docile. You accept your fate. It's all right here. Being on this plane about to die. Emergency water landing, 600 miles an hour, blank faces, calm as Hindu cows.
Wow.
So that's the...
I suppose you never think like that. It's a pretty pretty morbid way to think about it, but I guess there's a bit of truth.
This is, of course, nonsense.
So hang on, just to go back on that. So if the plane was going down, that would be a lot. The oxygen masks would drop if there's a loss of pressure. Isn't that what it is?
Yeah. It's not really.
So could you survive? Could you survive without the mask? Is what I'm trying to say.
If there's a loss of pressure, no, not for long, because there's not enough oxygen that high up.
Okay.
That's what it's for. Like what he's talking about is like if you're crashing, you're not necessarily going to get the gas mask or the oxygen mask, because if there's no loss of pressure, as you said, it won't get the gas mask. The oxygen masks are there to give you oxygen, because at that high of an altitude, there isn't enough for you to survive.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Here's one, Chris. This one actually could be good to go into depth on sometime. Denver Airport is hiding a secret military base.
I'm going to write that down.
You ever heard of that one before?
No. Denver Airport is hiding a secret military base.
Denver International Airport has found itself under intense scrutiny from conspiracy theorists since it opened in 1985. Philip Schneider, a structural engineer turned whistleblower who died in mysterious circumstances in 1996, claimed that beneath the airport lies a vast underground facility, prompting suggestions that the airport is actually hiding a secret military base or even a concentration camp.
What?
And why? Why, ask conspiracy theorists, do the runways form the shape of a swastika? So,
what?
So this interesting question.
That's pretty big claims.
Pretty big claims.
Yeah.
Interesting that Mr. Philip Schneider died a year after
making the claims.
The opening of this place. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
That could be definitely worth investigating.
Yes. Well, I've wrote it down, so if it's down, it will be investigated. That's how it works.
Here's another one, and I'm almost sure most people will have heard of this one. The brace position, you know, when you're going down an plane, the brace position will break your neck.
I've heard of that. Yeah, I've heard of that because of your head and the seat in front of you, your spine or something will just come shooting out through the top of your neck. Is that right?
That's the theory, is that, and that's just supposed to give you a quick death rather than burning and dying.
Again, that's pretty.
Some have suggested that it's only useful for preserving a passenger's teeth, so to allow for easier identification after a crash.
Oh yeah, right now, so you don't smack another seat in front of you.
Another claim is that the position actually increases the chance of a quick death by breaking your neck, and is subsequently recommended by airlines to reduce their own insurance bill. Because if you're dead, they don't have to pay for your...
Surely someone has looked into this as to what is the optimal position for being in a plane that's going down.
Yeah, there have been. This theory has been widely debunked by research.
So it is the optimal position?
Yeah, it is. There's a reason you're asked to do it. And there's more information on that. If you go look for it, don't take my word for it. I'm not an expert. You go do
they're
you.
They're pretty grim some of these day.
Yeah, well, Chris, you know, we're talking about 200 and something people dying. It's not going to be all light, dandy stuff all the time, okay?
Yeah, true.
Okay, we'll deal with some deep stuff. Here's one, Chris, and I only bring it up because we absolutely have to cover this in a full podcast sometime. Hopefully not too distant future.
Okay.
The Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
absolutely. Have to do this one.
Yep. Definitely.
So many disappearances, including Flight 19, a US Navy bomber.
Yep.
The Douglas DC-3 aircraft with 32 people on board, 1948. US Air Force base in 1963. But I've heard of there's ships that have gone missing. There's all.
I've read of some kind of some theories behind that that I'd like to get stuck into. Definitely, yeah. Let's do that one very soon then. Actually, it'll save me talking about it tonight.
Yeah, we don't have time to go into all the detail on that. I just thought I'd bring up a couple of those little.
Excellent. Thank you for accompanying the main meal with your dessert of morbidity.
Morbidity, yeah. Okay. That's what I'm here for.
That's our word now.
I brought the uplifting news to get everyone right up to here.
Yeah.
And then I just bring it all right down again.
Well,
with the morbid stuff.
I mean, it's all about balance, Dave.
It is.
I'd love to pick a few more brains about, like, I'd just love to know what people think about this whole thing, you know? And there's countless videos that you can go and watch about it. On YouTube, and there's documentaries about it, and there's shows about
including
it.
This one,
including this one. Now we have a YouTube. Podcast where we talk briefly about it, but I'd love to know what people think. That's just I don't know. You can't just lose a plane. I'm sorry.
And yet they did. My gosh.
And yet it happened in, you know, what, 4 or 5 years ago? 5 years ago? It's crazy. It's fucking crazy. But that is the disappearance of MH370, the plane that disappeared. But where did it go?
I still don't know.
Dee, let's discuss a little bit about what we've got up to over the past 7 days before we close off this episode.
Okay. For me, it was the 12th of July weekend there.
That's right,
so that's right. I took off Monday and Tuesday and headed off home to Derrynoose to see the family and to have a couple of relaxing days.
How was that?
It was great. It was.
How did you find being back in the land of Derrynoose?
It was nice, man. It was quiet and it was kind of like, it wasn't good weather, but it was dry. But no, we did a bit of spinning about. So we did, we went to Castle Sheen for like a walk.
Castle Sheen is pretty much non-existent now.
It's not too bad. Like, it's shocking at first. Yeah, when I came in, it was shocking. Like, that whole open area to, like, you know, where we normally go in, it's just completely gone.
There's a forest park, by the way, for any listeners. There's a forest.
Yeah, it's a forest park with no forest.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool because now there's a path that we never would have took. And it's like opened up now. You can go up and it takes you to a whole new different part of the forest that I've never even been to. But we didn't even go up there that time.
Could you get to the swing? Did you go near our swing? Yeah.
That's all still there.
Wow, cool.
It's fine. It's grand. I took a swing on it. It was harder to get on than I remember.
Wow. This is a site that we found in this forest years ago. You might have heard of us talking about it on this podcast before, but there's like this perfect campsite in this forest. It's so like isolated. Well, we thought it was anyway. It is pretty isolated. Yeah, like you're right slap bang.
It's isolated, but like a lot of people still walk right past it.
Yeah. And there's this big giant like oak or sycamore tree that just grows through the middle of the site. And it's got like this rope with like a swing on the end of it that swings straight across the river. It's just perfect. It's just an idyllic
idyllic. Yeah. That's a perfect word for it, actually.
Yeah.
And I went up to that and walked right the way up. There's also a waterfall in this little forest park.
That's right.
We walked right the way up to it, and it had rained recently, so it was like, you know, really powerful and just like rushing down. And I just love watching and listening and hearing that rushing water. It sounds so cool. All of that like rope swing and waterfall, and
that's awesome.
There's like a little bridge. Yeah, it's all still there. It's all totally fine.
Nice. I haven't been to that forest in years, dude. I think the last time was with you when we were shooting that Bowman stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You should take a gander up, Chris, because it's still a good spot. Went to the beach then on the Sunday.
Nice.
Went up to another place called Giles Key out near Dundalk.
Mm.
Shout out to Paddy Murray who gave me the tip on that place because we wanted somewhere quiet where we could take the dogs out and let them run around and stuff.
Yep.
Man, I got a shock when we got out of the car and you just heard like the waves rolling up onto the sand.
Yeah.
It was, again, it was like, it was so loud. It was like this powerful water. Yeah. And I was like, I thought these things were like really soft and like sort of, you know, like wash up. These things were like rolling up the sand.
Mother Nature will kill you, D.
It fucking will, man. Yeah. Don't doubt it.
Yeah.
But it just, it sounded so refreshing and like kind of just, I just love that experience, and I just love being by the ocean so much.
Yeah, it's so clean, it's enjoyable. Pure, it's just, it's real, real nice. I know the feeling, yeah, it's awesome.
Also drove up through Carlingford. I don't know if you've ever been to Carlingford.
I've been through Carlingford, I haven't been in Carlingford.
It's a nice little town, it was okay. Packed.
Was it? Yeah, oh, it's
coronavirus, don't worry about it, man, it's jammed. We literally just drove through it to get through it.
Yeah,
because we weren't interested in stopping after waiting for like 20 minutes in traffic.
Yeah,
and then Monday, I just went to Rossmore Forest Park in Monaghan.
Very nice.
Another lovely.
It's lovely.
Equally yeah. Amazing place.
Yeah,
we followed the path right. We followed the river the whole way up. There's little like hydro dam things.
Yeah,
and
yeah, that's right.
There's this like walk through, like, I forget what it's called, like some sort of grove or something like that.
Okay.
Yew trees, that's what it is.
Oh, okay.
And we walked through those. It was class walk.
Very nice.
Thoroughly enjoyed. And that was really it. Just that, and went for a steak in Waterses in Blaney.
How was that?
It was good, yeah. It was good. The socially distanced stuff, it was kind of like a really quiet and chill mood. So
yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, the whole weekend, like it was a holiday for us, but like it was all local. It was all right around us.
Good.
It's good.
Choosing local. I like that.
That's it.
Choosing local for your holiday.
Not much else, to be honest.
No.
Watched a bit of The Expanse. That's what we're watching at the minute. And do you know, I think that's all, man. That's all.
I can't really top much of that either. I've had a very quiet week. I have, past couple of days, I've been brought back a peg or two with a wisdom tooth that's coming up, and it's just driving me mad. My mouth is like full of like ulcers around it in the gum, and I can't like eat or chew properly. That's just, it's driving me mad at the minute. So I think it's wisdom tooth, but I don't know. It's just, it's been hell for a couple of days. Yeah, even sleeping with it and stuff, like I can't lie on that side properly at the minute. So I'm hoping it's gone by like next week, or else I'm gonna have to go get it seen about, I think, or get something for it.
Does that go away? I don't understand wisdom teeth.
But hey, honestly, I don't understand them either. It's like teeth that like you don't need, but they're there. They're just, it's basically just the pain is just it pushing up through the gum. But I don't need any more teeth in my mouth.
I need any more of these.
I have the teeth I have, D. And the pain isn't so much coming from the actual tooth. It's like the gum surrounding it and like my cheek gum that's just constantly like brushing up against it and just cause like tears and cuts and things. And that's just real sore and real annoying. It's not a nice experience.
I had something fairly similar with that where it was like my bottom teeth must have moved or aligned differently or something like that. And one of them was just cutting a hole in my bottom lip every time I talked. Took a drink, took a bite to eat, and it was just murder.
It's real bad. Like, yeah. Thankfully, the one thing that kind of settles this is like hot liquids, so tea and water. Whiskey. But rinsing with salt and water, like every couple of hours to try to keep it clean, I guess. But
yeah,
it's not a nice thing. But no, just been chilling out. I've watched. I finished up The Walking Dead on Amazon, so I'm ready to move on to some of those recommendations you give me. I did watch a couple of documentaries during the week. Nothing really of massive importance or that was even
you
yeah
have to tell me something about what you've been doing. That's for the right last while.
yes well, on the last, I have been intermittent fasting thanks to your recommendation on IAF, and it's been
intermittent fast,
and even did one day of OMAD or one meal a day. And it's so out of my comfort zone. Well, it was so out of my comfort zone when I first started it. I didn't like it at all. But now, like, I'm like, what, like 2.5 months into it? And I'm really, like, it's just like a way of doing things now. Like, I have my set eating windows, like, do like a 16-8, I think it's called. It's just where you eat for 8 hours and you fast for 16. Some days I do like OMAD or maybe like 2 meals a day, like a very fasted day where like I'm not training or anything, and it's so good. Like, I feel so good when I get up in the morning. Like, I go to bed, like my last meal in the evening, most evenings are between 5 and 6 depending on when I've started my fast. So I finish eating, and then first meal then is like 9-10 o'clock the next day, and it's really, really good. I really enjoy this a lot. I didn't think I would with training and stuff in the morning, but if anything, I think it just makes you a lot sharper, a lot more
fit. Oh, yeah. You train before you eat, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think that's definitely the way to do it. I got onto intermittent fasting because I just don't eat breakfast.
Yeah.
It's the most important meal of the day, and I just don't eat it.
Yeah.
Can't help it. I can't stomach food that early in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm still like that. Today I didn't eat until lunch, and I'm not intermittent fasting. I didn't feel the need.
Yeah.
I have a cup of tea now. That's the difference. Because intermittent fasting, you couldn't have tea or anything. Any form of calorie, whether that should be milk or like
or caffeine sugar. Or anything like that. Yeah. Anything like
basically. I mean, you can take black coffee.
Yeah. Well, I was reading about that as well. And then this, I don't know if you ever heard of Rhonda Patrick, the doctor Rhonda Patrick, it's female.
No.
She was saying that literally anything that will stimulate your liver or your kidneys, can't remember which one, and caffeine does that. She goes, it's not technically fasting because your body's having to work. So she says, just keep it clean with water. But I've went for like caffeine free teas, obviously after my cutoff time, and then just water in the morning until I'm ready to.
Yeah. I think it depends on your goals as well, because a lot of people who are doing intermittent fasting are doing it to lose weight. So if you're not eating any calories before, as long as you don't kick off that like process of what do you call that thing? Insulin.
Like an instant response.
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't kick that off, you're okay. Mm. But if you're trying to do it for like metabolic reasons
I was doing it just to see how I felt, because I don't particularly like eating late at night. I don't like going to bed feeling incredibly full. I just don't like how that leaves me feeling, especially it's not even the going to bed part, because 9 times out of 10 I'll sleep sound like a log after having a big meal. It's just like your body's response.
Won't sleep right though.
No and see then whenever I wake up it's just, I feel like awful. I have like acid reflex and just, no, it's not good. So doing it this way is definitely.
A good friend of mine once explained to me the logic behind this, Chris, and it's the same whenever you've been drinking, and you don't want a really bad hangover, you got to sit up and you got to let your body process that shit. Because if you go to sleep on a full stomach or a full feed of drink, it's going to sit in you all night, and it's going to make your stomach just a fucking acidic pit of death.
Yeah.
And nothing processes until you wake up. Nothing processes properly. So you got to sit there, Chris, after you eat your food or after you take your drink, and you got to let it go through you.
Is that like you got to sit
right it out
because you're upright or because your body's moving.
Your body's working, yeah. You slow down, your metabolic rate slows down.
Basically. Okay, that's a good way.
None of the sugar processes, and you wake up in the next morning, you got all that shit in you and all this acid and you're dehydrated.
No, it's kept me a lot cleaner on my diet and everything as well, because it's like I have an 8-hour window, and the way I've been telling myself is like, I could fill this 8-hour window. It's like at the start I was like lethal. I can just eat like whatever I want for 8 hours and that's me getting my calories. And then I thought, well, why not just eat foods that are good for me in the 8 hours? Do you know what I mean? I'm only going to get these 8 hours today, so I better eat foods that are somewhat good for me. And it's definitely kept me a lot cleaner. Now I do admit at the weekend, on Sundays, especially as of late, I've let my eating rhythm go on for like an extra hour or two, but I will then make up for it wherever it starts on a Monday. Sense, but like instead of like
you're still doing a 16-hour gap
exactly
between,
I eat whatever the hell I want on a Sunday. Like I like my sister has been baking like delicious vegan cookies and cakes and everything like every weekend for like the last like month. And I have just been gorging myself like the fat bastard I am on a Sunday day with everything inside.
You need to, Chris, next step is like 18-6.
Yeah. Oh,
shit. And then you want to go 24, right? And then, Chris, you're going to do the fucking 5-2 and you're going to fucking fast for 2 days. I would advise going onto the intermittent fasting Reddit page.
Oh,
number one, because literally every day there's another post of some person who has just lost like 10 or 20 stone, not 20 stone, but like 10 or 50. Yeah. So massive transformations. And then also because there's a lot of people who talk about their different variations of it. I don't even do it anymore. I think it's fascinating in general.
It is.
Like some people will do like religiously, I'll eat as I please today.
Yeah.
And tomorrow I'll fast. I won't eat. I'll drink water. Wow. Water fast. Yeah. And then I'll eat and then I'll fast and then I'll eat and then I'll fast. And they just iterate like that.
Wow. There's so many ways of doing this.
Yeah. A lot of people think that, because there's a little bit of science behind it, but it's not very credible yet, mm-hmm. that your body, when you're fasting, goes into that state of
fight or flight.
Kind of, yeah. It'll repair quicker. Your body's going to commit resources because it thinks you're in a state of, if you imagine, like, we're back in, like, the hunter-gatherer days.
Yes.
It thinks you're in a state of famine.
Yes.
And it thinks, I need to prepare for...
It's trying to preserve your body, basically. Yeah, because...
Whereas if you're eating and you're eating plentifully, your body does need to, doesn't need to operate in that way.
So I like that theory. Like, yeah, it also shows you, Dee, just how much you eat unnecessarily.
Oh, absolutely.
It's crazy. Yeah. Like, it's boredom, that's something I noticed. Eating, like... Boredom eating is crazy. Like I would have just ate like another, like maybe meal or two at nights before I started this and thinking that I needed it. And I just didn't, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's definitely been eye opening, but I'm going to keep it up for the time being and see how I get on with it and see what way
I go. Definitely should. I think there's also an element of kind of like challenge.
Oh yeah,
to it,
big time.
You know, it's
big
like time. I want to see if I can push it now. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned you did a couple of days of just one meal. And
I did.
I want to see if I can push this and just sort of, I'll only let myself eat for 2 hours and just
mostly those days where I did the one meal was like days where I was coming off like a Sunday, for example, where the day before I had like completely, just gorged myself, and the next day I don't feel too much like eating anyway, so I just eat one big meal and that's me. But I'd like to try like maybe. OMAD's, middle of the week or something, or just a complete day of fasting. Myself and my sister have done a couple of 24 and 36 hour fast completely before this. I'd like to try this properly now, but I definitely recommend, just trying it for like a day or two a week just to see how you feel with like eating within like a certain window. And the biggest thing I took away from it was it's not a diet. It's just an eating window, basically.
Yeah, you can still eat complete shit and not feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Or only for 6 hours or 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
You might lose weight by accident because you're not doing it. You're only eating that shit twice a day instead of 3 times a day.
But exactly.
You may not.
But that's all I really have to add this week. I've done very little, very very little else. I know there's like a whole pile of stuff I should probably catch you up with, but I think we should do an episode coming up, be it the 100 or after the 100, where we just sit down and we just do like a proper full catch up and maybe just talk shit and tell some old stories and things.
I think that would be a good one to do over, I don't know, a game of like Minecraft or
perfect,
some sort of game where we can both just sit down and a game of chess.
A game of gentlemen, or, a game of chess. No, I get you. Yeah, we could just play along and just riff raff for a while. That would be excellent. That's a great idea, actually.
If you want to see that, thumbs up and subscribe and hit the bell.
Hit that bell. I'll bring the bell back up here.
And follow us and like us and tweet at us and be tweeted upon.
Definitely. That is something, though, that we should touch on just before we go. If you do enjoy this podcast and you feel that anybody you could possibly know that you think... they might like what these guys are talking about. Do recommend.
They might like our podcast. Yeah.
See what they think, because you don't know what you like until you hear it. That's the truth, Dee.
Just notice now, Chris, that I have turned into a Simpsons character.
How's that?
I'm yellow.
No, I don't think you look too... No, you don't look too yellow. No.
Okay, that's good. I look very tan. No. I've been hitting the beach... at the weekend there.
Yeah.
The rays been hitting me.
Yeah. If that's all, do you have any closing thoughts? Do you have anything you want to add?
I think that Malaysian Airlines flight M370 is just invisible.
I think it's still out there, Dee.
I think it looks over us.
Yeah. Watches over us, protects us. A silent protector. A watchful guardian.
The Dark Knight?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dark airplane.
Yeah.
An invisible airplane.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We will see you all next week with episode 99, if you can believe it, Dee. And thank you to all who've kept up with us so far to this point. Remember, you can find the audio version on any podcast hosting service or the video version over at youtube.com/emptypromisepodcast. Remember, head over to www.calderalabs.com and use discount code EMPTYPROMISE. That's EMPTYPROMISE. Doesn't matter, all caps, but no space. Doesn't matter if it's caps or not, sorry, I should say. No space, and get yourself 20% off Caldera Labs, the good face serum for men. You will not be disappointed. Just trust me on this recommendation. If I could recommend one thing to you, I think I've used in the last year, it would definitely be that.
He says Caldera Labs. <It's> like, if I can recommend one thing, it wouldn't be that, but it's close.
It's close. It's up there. It's definitely up there. But ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for joining us this week. We will see you all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed next week for episode 99. Goodbye and God bless.
Bye.